Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2TTT, Whiskey 2 Tango Tango Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR W2TTT. Okay, that was the right answer. Very good. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net meets weekly on 146955, the 2-meter repeater of the Alpine, probably of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. And this net is, this net meets weekly at 9 p.m. For the specific purpose of having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computing, the ways we operate our equipment and our and enjoy our hobby. We have a conversation about natural phenomena that support the hobby and the underlying technologies that we so enjoy. And we can even talk about some of the friendly social aspects of the hobby and service as well. There's many different kinds of amateur radio, and you know, I've often said if you put 50 hands in a town, the likelihood of 50 hands all operating and working each other frequently is fairly low, actually. Having said that, it's not because they're not active, well, some might not be, but because they're doing different things at different times. So they may not trip over each other, which is kind of a fascinating aspect of the hobby. In any case, we have an organized check-in. The way we do this check-in is we do it by call sign. We also check the echo link as well. For those who would like to monitor EchoLink, it's K2-Foxtrot-Juliet-L, K2-Foxtrot-Juliet-L for the EchoLink. And for accessing the repeater, it's a minus 600 kilohertz split, 146.955, 146.955 in Alpine. And then the PL is 141.3. So, with no further ado, let's start with who's on EchoLink. We check in with our call sign, our name, and we indicate whether we'll have a question, comments, both, or none of the above. Questions, comments, both, or none of the above. And we'll do this in an orderly way. So, KB2CUM, since I know you're there on EchoLink, let's start with you. Will you be registering any questions or comments tonight? And don't forget to introduce yourself with your call sign and your name. K2BAR.
Good evening. Gordon, this is KC2UM. The name here is Alan. With a question.
Okay, Alan, very good. Are there any other stations on EchoLink that want to check in?
KC2UMH, Paul, Arrington Park, probably both.
Brady. Very good. Any other stations on EchoLink? All righty. Well, then let's go on to the alpha calls. Any stations whose call signs begin with an alpha, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and indicate with your question, comment, both, or none of the above. Okay, no alphas heard. Let's try something else. How about Whiskey 2's?
Whiskey 2, Charlie Hotel, Ray, White Plains. None of the above. Good evening.
Evening. How are you, Ray? Good to hear you. Any other Whiskey 2's?
W2JEK, Don, with a comment.
With a comment, Don. Good evening to you. Any other Whiskey 2's? All right. Any other whiskeys? All right. Any other kilo twos?
With Marilyn, KC2NYU, Marilyn, White Plains. KC2NKU, Marilyn, MARY, and for White Plains. No questions, no comments. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Marilyn. Very good. Any other kilos? something in there again.
ETCFS, Roy from Kearney, New Jersey.
Hey, Roy from Kearney, will you be issuing questions or comments tonight?
No questions or comments for this evening. Thank you.
Did you get me, K20?
Yeah, I did get you, Jim. Thank you. What will you be doing?
I just had some comments, that's all.
Too far, I have you and Don with comments. All right. Any other kilos?
A2 AMI, Tony. Possibly a comment. No questions.
Okay, very good, Tony. Got you there. All right. Any other kilos? All righty. I'll take that as a no. November stations. Okay. Any other call signs wish to check in at this time? Please call K2BAR.
And that's 2K.
And good evening, James. Will we be doing the question and comment thing?
Not right off.
Alrighty. You should probably follow up on your email about the Raspberry Pi and the TBBT receivers. That's rather interesting. And I have a question actually for you, which I'm going to give you a hint at just so you know. It's a different subject, and that is what kind of filtering do you think is going to be necessary for the Sirius user to have on their receiver once the AT&T WCS spectrum opens up? Do you think it'll require retrofitting for people who live in areas where, I guess that's what, 2100, 2200 megahertz are involved? That should be interesting, to say the least. Just kind of curious what your thoughts are on that. Alrighty. Anybody else? Alrighty. One more time with feeling. Anybody else for the net? Alright, let's get it on then. WTJK, you're first. K2BAR.
Hi, K2BAR on the net. W2JEK, good evening, everybody. I just want to announce that our next GE test session will be on Friday, November the 16th at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School, classroom 123. And if anybody has a question, you can ask now or come call me on the phone or however. I guess that's about all I have right now. Back to net, W2JEK.
Okay, very good. So anybody have any questions for Don regarding upcoming test sessions or testing in general? Whoops, I don't know what to tell you, Don. I guess that's it, but interesting nonetheless. Do you have anything you want to follow up with?
No, that's about all right now. The only calculators you can use are calculators, not cell phones or iPods or any of these other electronic devices. It has to be strictly a calculator that we can make sure that the memory is cleared of all aids that shouldn't be there. Back to net, W2JK.
Yeah, you probably, all right, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. I know you've said that for a while, and I totally understand why, but I think if a session is not particularly crowded, I don't see a reason why someone couldn't sit next to the person taking the test to supervise what's coming up on the little screen. Be sure that nothing inappropriate was done. Just a thought. You might want to think about that. I mean, obviously you can't do that for when you have 20 people in the room. Might be something to consider. I heard this because someone else in a faraway place actually did do that. That's how they handle it, to make sure that there's no hanky-panky. They just basically sit somebody right next to them watching the calculator. In fact, they all but have to ask for the sorry about that. They all would have to ask for the calculator in order to get it. That might be something else to consider. Anyway. I don't know why, but I'm having trouble with my product key here. This is weird. I don't understand why that would be. But anyway. Ah, dear me. Anyway, I've been typing it after putting it in. It's not working. Oh, well. All right, enough of that. Don, you want to respond?
Yeah, well, for one thing, with text messaging and things like that, that is possible that somebody could say, hey, how do you figure out this or that? Also, the possibility is that somebody with that camera, and these things has a camera in them, could take pictures of the exam sheet and transmit them out to somebody else, and this would destroy the security of that exam. So that's another reason we don't want them in there. So rather than start playing games, we just state no. And I usually try to bring a calculator with me. That way, that problem should become moot. Back to net, W2JK.
That's certainly an effective way of doing it. Yeah, there are ways to take care of the text messaging and camera stuff. We're not picking it up. We're leaving it on the table. And you put it in airplane mode. But yeah, I understand. I mean, it really comes down to a matter of you know, available labor and attention more than technology. We can always make sure the technology doesn't get abused. But anyway, very good. Very, very good. Anybody else have any questions for Don? Alrighty, well then, let's move on. Mr. Tony, K2AMI, your questions, or your comment, I should say, K2AR.
Comment, Gordon, and that is that this coming Sunday, Bergen Amish Radio Association is going to have their fall fox hunt. We'll be assembling between 12 and 12:30 at the Westwood High School parking lot. Hold on, windows just opened. Westwood High School parking lot, and hopefully we'll have teams organized by then at that time, and then by 1 o'clock we should start looking for the fox. And the fox will be an effort to try to locate the fox between 1 and 3. And along about 3 o'clock, everybody gets hungry, it seems, and we try to find a pizza parlor. So it's an enjoyable evening for Barra members or anybody who would like to join us and experience the fun of hunting a fox. It's the only comment, and all are welcome. You can join. If you don't have equipment, you can join one of the teams that do have equipment.
Yeah, I can say from my own experience, it's a lot of fun. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to this one. Coming home from the Catholic Scout Retreat and the Jamboree on the Air that's going to take place Saturday, Friday night at 8 o'clock in the night to Sunday at 8 o'clock is actually Worldwide Jamboree on the Air. That's another thing to think about, too. For wondering why there's all these Scout people on the radio this weekend. That could be why. So, do think about that as you patrol the bands. Anyway, anybody else have any follow-ups for Tony? Alrighty. Now that settles that. I'm going to have to restart my product installation because, for whatever reason, it's not taking my key. That's really weird. Okay. Can't tell you why. It checks out. It's the same key I put in last time. Dear me. Anyway, I can't tell you why. I have no clue. Alrighty. Let's see. I did hear a burp or a chirp with Tony. Was someone else trying to get in at that time?
No, but W2CH comment.
Go ahead, Ray.
Just so I mentioned, with the JADA being on from 8 to 8, what's that, Friday, tomorrow night, till Sunday at 8, or 0-100 UTC, the New York QSO party, which has 50 plaques, Being in New York here, I just thought I'd mention it and sponsor one of the plaques. Thought I'd mention that. 10 o'clock Saturday morning till 10 Saturday night, I believe. 12 hours.
Oh, that's nice, because the New York QSO party is always a fun event. So that's good. Good opportunity to work 80 and 40 meters in particular. Maybe 20, but probably 80 and 40 are your best. Maybe even 30 meters, if you, I don't know if you're supposed to use that band for that, but sounds great. That's great. I always enjoyed the New York QSO party. All right. Anybody have any questions about what Ray's bringing up? Ray, any follow-up? Okie dokie. Well, let's call it square at that point. All right, are there any other stations checking into the net tonight? Please call KGBAR.
KGBAR, this is W2LCN, complete check-in. Just listen.
Okay, W2LCN, very good. Good of you to show up. Very good. Anybody else? Okay, before I go to Jim, Mr. K2ZO, just wanted to throw out something here, and I'm going to let you stew on it for a few minutes, and then we'll come back to it after Jim presents what he wants to present. And that is that I got a note from Tom, Tony's nephew, WA2PNI, who mentioned that on Split Rock, they are their TechNet, which I believe is Sunday night also, by the way, just like 8-5, but I think it's earlier, is now featuring a section on listing swap and shop. So it's a swap and shop listing thing. You can't negotiate, but you can list the item, tell what it's about, answer technical questions about it, and of course list the price and a contact phone number to do any subsequent negotiations. So if that's interesting to people, we can certainly add that. I think that might be kind of a fun thing to do. So we'll add that as well. But I wanted to get feedback on that point before we definitely say yes, yes. And with that, let's go to K2ZO. K2BAR. Go ahead, Jim. How are you?
Okay. Good evening, all. K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Well, as you know, I've been fooling around with balance and the off-center fed antennas, and we have come up with an off-center fed version that's fed at a point where it'll offer a reasonably low impedance so that even the radio will tune it up on all bands. We used it last week at our portable day, and once the afternoon came around, the bands got better, and we worked a lot of stations with it, a lot of DX. I even worked a guy in Switzerland who knew exactly where we were because he grew up in Bergen County. He got the biggest kick out of talking to us. But anyway, I have constructed the exact same antenna. I built two of them, and gave one to Phil, WA2LXE, to use at the Boy Scout Jamboree this weekend up in Alpine. Now, that antenna should tune without any problem with just the tuner and the radio, every one of the bands from 40 to 6 meters. And actually, with about 100 feet of coax on it, it will tune on 80 meters. But it'll be down about 3 dB from a full-size one. But works good. I used it in the VHF contest, had it up in my backyard, had a battery, and it sat at the picnic table, and made a number of contacts on 6 meters with it. So anyway, listen for the guys, and we'll see what kind of signals they put out. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they think of the antenna after the jamboree is over. Back to that, it's K2ZO.
I think that's marvelous. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to finish mine, and that is a shame. I'm either going to try to cobble it, finish cobbling it together tomorrow, or I'm going to 40 meter, 80 meter dipole. We might do that. It doesn't much matter. But that's the plan as of right now. My biggest problem was I could not accumulate 4-to-1 balance. I thought I had one handy. I know I have one. That's, by God, got to be handy. But, my shack is sort of like, my shack and basement are kind of like your shack and basement. So a lack of order in places that needs to be improved upon, to say the least. Anyway, get there. But we should have fun tomorrow. Saturday. We're looking forward to it. It should be kind of neat. So, anyway, anybody have any comments for Jim as a follow-up? Okay, Jim, that's a great antenna. Thank you for circulating the materials on it. I cut all the wire and got all that squared away. And just sat there staring at myself wondering where the hell I put the balance. That's right, we'll find it. I have one place to look in a little while, and I might just do that. So we shall see.
Now, it really wants a current-type balance, okay? Not a voltage balance, so just remember that. I'm going to send you the info on it right now.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So, you know, one of the W2AU 4-to-1 balance is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, that's a voltage balance. You may have some RF on the feed line with that. If you have a choke behind it, you'll be okay. But, yeah, you really want a current balance. You'll see what I'm going to talk about here in a minute, and I'll send it over to you.
Yeah, I know the type, but it's very useful. Yeah, thank you. Dear me. All right. Curious, anybody want to ask some questions about this antenna or other antennas at this time?
This is Whiskey 2 Juliet Charlie. Question, or?
On this subject, or is it your first question?
On the antenna and the balance, or?
Yeah, go ahead, Jim. It's all yours.
Could we get quick description of dimensions, and also, if there's time, could Jim explain the difference between a current balance and a voltage balance? I suspect there might be other people who would be interested in that. Or...
Brady, I think that's a marvelous idea. James, are you done doing whatever you were doing?
Yes.
Tally-ho.
Okay, this is K2ZO. The difference between a current balance and a voltage balance, and this more or less applies to 1-to-1 and 4-to-1 type balance, but more to 4-to-1, is that the 4-to-1, let's say a 4-to-1 balance, which is what we're talking about this antenna, the voltage balance is nothing more than an auto transformer. If you take a look at it, you've got a winding on a core, and then it's tapped. You bring the 50 ohm to the center of the core winding, and you take your 200 ohm off the end, okay? So just draw a squiggly line which is a coil, and tap it in the center. Put the ground at the center, the shield at the center of the coil. On one end, you put the center conductor, the 50 ohm, and then the other side is the 4-to-1. So that's a 4-to-1 balance. Let me drop it here. And that has been the typical traditional type transformer balance. The problem with those balances is that if you have an impedance that is slightly different than what it's designed for, it no longer has a 4-to-1 impedance, and you can get very big differences in the current on either side of the feed. And that can really give you problems. Now we take the extreme case of an off-center fed antenna, where you really can have problems. Now you want a current balance. Okay, now the current band is constructed differently. The current band consists of two bifilar windings. They can be on two different cores, or they can be wound on one core, depending on the power level. So you've got a pair of parallel bifilar windings, and you wind 10 turns on one side, and you wind 10 turns on the other side. Now, what happens at the feed point, you parallel up both windings. You use a black and a white wire, makes it easy, black to black, white to white. At the other end of the ballot, you hook it up in series, in series, so that the two wires come off a white and a black, and the other two, white and black, are connected together. So basically, what you have is a voltage step up of 2-1, which is an impedance step up of 4-1. Okay, your turn ratio change of 2-1 because you remember it's the square of the turn ratio. So if anybody's interested, just send me an email and I'll send them the drawing on how to do this. But anyway, that's the big difference. And with the current balance, you actually force the current to be equal on each side. It doesn't care about the impedance that it sees because of the way it's designed. The current has to be the same on each side for the most part. And that's the difference between a voltage balance and a current balance.
Okie doke. Jim, did you want to ask any more questions?
Oh, that was excellent. How about dimensions on the offset dipole? I know it's been mentioned before, but I never wrote it down.
There's three critical dimensions. Jim, you want to roll it out?
Oh, at ARRL, and I will send you both files so you'll get an idea of what we're talking about here. I'll send you both, okay?
Jumped on you at the very beginning, but send you Jim an email at k2zo@awrl.net.
Okay. The only problem with that is it deprives all the other net members of the information. But I will do that. Thank you.
We can go through the dimensions here one more time, Jim. I know I've asked only about a dozen times.
The antenna is 68 feet long, 68 feet. I got to go back and look at my drawing. But it's basically 68 feet long. And it's fed off-center by about 11 feet, 10 and a half inches. So it's kind of an extreme off-center fed. There's a number of different variations. This one doesn't give you a perfect SWR anywhere. The SWR never gets real high, but it never gets real low. So the beauty of it is that if you have a radio with a tuner in it, most tuners and radios don't work above 3-1. So what you want to do is design an antenna that the SWR on all the bands doesn't really get too high, and that's what this does. And with my antenna tuner and a radio, I can tune it on actually with a 100 and so foot of RG 8X. I can tune it from 80 to 6 meters every band with just the tuner and the radio. So it makes an ideal portable or antenna or even a permanent antenna. Back to that.
Mr. JC, did you want to add any more to that?
Only that Jim always gives fantastically excellent responses. Thank you very much. Sure.
Yeah, I think that, it's taken me a long time to get into my head, what that coil looks like on a ferrite. And I'll tell you, it is so straightforward. It really, really is. The mathematical principles are easy enough, but just the mechanical aspects of wiring the thing is just amazing. It's a bifilar winding, center tapped, where the white whites and black blacks are tied together on one end, and the black white black white are connected together at the other end. I mean, just how simple is that? It's just, you know, duh. Jim, do you want to say anything? Sister Zetto?
No, I just sent you a file on the ballot, and I'm looking for the my dimensions here that I have down here. I have them in my book, but my book is downstairs. But I do have it here. As I say, send me an email, anybody who wants them, and I will send it on to you.
You too, J.K.
Mr. Don.
Jim, I think I wrote it down here once before. 11 feet, 10 and a half inches, one side of the thing, and the whole thing is 68 feet, 5 and a half inches. Does that sound right?
It does.
Exactly it. Yep.
So that was your 11 feet, 10 inches from the end, and then got the other remaining part on the other side of the bow. That's not 11 and a half. That's not 11 feet from the center. That's 11 feet from an end. That's what I'm going to make sure of.
And the other is 56 feet 7 inches.
Yeah, is there someone on the link one that's coming?
And I was using the other one that you designed with the Quinley feet. And now Mike Tuner probably has a voltage balance in it. I guess would that be detrimental, or because I'm using the open wire, or in this case, the unknown Quinley?
Yeah, it'll still work because I did it with a voltage. Well, if you've got a twin lead fed version of it, which I have right now. It seems to work well with a voltage balun, but you might get a little bit of RF, and you might want to put a little choke behind that, you know, a coil of coax. But when you put it up at the top with a voltage balun and feed it with coax, then you sometimes do have a off balance, because it is significantly off balance, the antenna. So you're much better off with this thing. And I'll send you the file on the current balun, okay?
Okay, very good. Thank you. WTJEK back.
Okay, very good. Jim WTJC, did you want to add anything to that?
It's WTJC, being the devil's advocate. I'll ask another question that other people might wonder about. Since the dimensions are given down to a half an inch, does that account for the insulator at the 11 foot, 10 and a half inch position? And if so, how long does that insulator have to be?
Okay, do I have it?
You do.
Okay, well, first of all, at the end of the antenna, at the ends, you fold the wire back. You loop it through the insulator, and you tape it, and you always make it a little bit longer so that you can adjust it, okay? Where the wire goes through the insulator is where you measure from, because the wire that you tape back along doesn't count, okay, because it's connected. If you looped it through and it hung down, it would make a difference. So you loop it through, you tape it back, and that way it doesn't become any additional length. The length stops at the loop through the insulator. Up at the balun, if you have, you know, 3 inches of wire coming out of the balun, you add that into the total where it may go into the center insulator, okay? So you've got to count that extra 3 inches. Now, it's not that important, especially if you're going to use it with a tuner. But the dimensions that I have here were ones that came up with a computer program that actually calculated what it would do. And as they say, the impedance of the antenna is not 50 ohms anywhere, but it's close. And it's a compromise so that you can use the tuner to get you where you need to be. For example, an SWR of 2-to-1 really doesn't cause any problems in terms of losses and things like that. It's minuscule. Certainly a 10-to-1 would be a problem, but the problem loading it up. So, you know, you go down, you find like 1.5-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-1, something like that. But you can optimize it. I have one that's optimized for 80 meters, and it's completely flat. It's completely flat across the whole band, 1.3 at CWN, and at the top of the phone end, 1.3. Don't need a tuner with it. It's a very unique antenna in terms of feeding it off. But in reality, it's no, really no more than a dipole, but it's just a dipole that's been tweaked so that you can use it on lots of frequencies.
Anybody have any follow-up for Jim?
Yeah, Mr. Gay.
Go ahead, James.
Oh, the request would be that for Jim to include that 80-meter antenna in his little email. Anyway, the other question for Jim is, has he had a chance to think about Dave's binocular current balance? Very, very interesting device.
Yes, Jim, I just sent you an email tonight about that. Some more information on the permeability of that, how he constructs it, and what he does. Surprisingly, the permeability of that binocular type balance is less than the other balance that we've been fooling with, the other cores, I should say. We've been fooling with the new Type 31 material, which has a permeability of about 2,000. Dave claims that the one that he makes has got a permeability of 800. So anyway, when I see you, if I see you on Friday evening, I will show you the one that I recently got from him that I have put in a box that I got from Home Depot. It looks real neat. Back in it.
Jim, is that basically the kind of box, like a little NEMA box, like a NEMA 3R plastic box to hold it? Is that what that is?
Yes, a little square box, gray.
With the gasket. Yeah, they have those at Home Depot. I actually looked at the 1 foot square plastic ones for something else just yesterday, and decided that I could put my gear in there, but boy, it'd be really tight. And so I opted to get a 16 or 18 inch square metal box. Same basic concept, but gasket, etc. But that's a whole other subject for another day. Alrighty. Anybody else on this subject? Alrighty. Very good. Couple of things to think about. I'm using an old Linco DJ510 or DR510. Pardon me, DR510. Dual band radio. And when I transmit, I'm noticing with my little voice on radio power checker device, it's 95.5 watts. When I unkey on receive, it's about 6 watts, and that includes two small atom processors, which I've concluded have about a 1 watt or less power consumption between the two of them. With a solid-state drive and a little tiny fan on each one, atom processor sucks like no power. It really is amazing. They said it would suck 10 watts. I don't see 10 watts in a million years out of this thing. Out of two of them running, anyway. It's pretty amazing. These little power check devices are cool. And I haven't added the telemetry to, the USB telemetry yet, but that'll be the next thing. I'm just looking at the display on the front. Very handy. Alrighty. So I think we're all squared away for Jamboree on the Air this weekend. And we'll be having fun. That's the important thing. We will be having fun operating and showing kids amateur radio either in our shacks or in the remote shacks. So, let's see. I'll throw it back to K2ZO because he wants to add more. K2BAR.
Okay, no, nothing else. I just sent some stuff to Jim, and I sent some stuff to you. The group you're going to be, are you going to be with the group up in Alpine, Gordon?
No, unfortunately not. The Catholic Scout Retreat is this weekend, and so we
we'll be at Ross Dock. We'll be like a half mile or mile north of the George Washington Bridge, right on the river.
Oh, okay. So I wasn't sure whether you're going to be up there with that group. I'd be curious as to what call sign or anything that we're going to use is going to look for them. Okay, that's it. Back to that.
Yeah, I don't know what call sign they're going to use. We'll see what we can do about that for next time. We've got actually some nice call signs for our scout facilities. And we'll get that arranged for next time. But anyway, anybody else?
2AMI with comment.
Hey, Johnny.
Sunday, I discussed the call sign with Phil, and I think he said he was going to use WA2LXE as a call sign for the Alpine troop.
We'll be using either NJ2BS or W2TTT. We might actually be using both at various times, but most likely NJ2 Boy Scouts. Great. Just to remind everybody, Jamboree on the Air is from Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time through 8 o'clock on Sunday. And give out some points. Actually, there's no point. Just give out some QSOs. It's not quick and hit and miss QSOs. It's more conversational. Probably have to listen carefully to some really, really timid voices. Usually the problem with scouts, they tend to be a little mic shy. That is, they tend to be a little mic rude, but usually for every 20 shy ones, you get one rude one, if that, maybe less. But anyway, I hope that Phil has a good time with his, and I think next year we'll have even more stations operating throughout the county, and actually our scout council in general. Alrighty, by the way, there may be also one up in New York Alpine. He's going to be at the end of Ruckman Road where it meets Anderson, where we did the transmitter hunt that one time. He will not be on the 9W side, so keep that in mind as well. He'll be from Piermont to Ruckman to Anderson, and then up into the camp. And I don't know which site he's using, but I'm sure he'll have a good time. It's going to be a glorious day on Saturday. All righty. Anybody else? All righty. So I guess our next topic. Oh, first of all, let's take any more check-ins. Any more check-ins? Great. Very good. Then let's move on. Our next topic was to come back to thoughts on whether or not we should have a sandwich shop as part of this net. We can even take gray, scales of gray, if you will. We don't need to have a full blown one. We can do it as parts. But just want to get anybody's thoughts. If they have any. They want to stay on the air, they're welcome to do it now. If not, we can say it later, and or they can send me an email at w2ttt@awrl.net. So, with that in mind, anybody?
W2JC.
Yes, sir, Mr. Jim.
I thought it was a good idea for a couple of years.
Tell us how you really feel. Outstanding, all right. So, take that into account. Thank you for that. Anybody else? All right. Well, I think that that kind of settles it for this moment, but there's always room for further discussion. So feel free to, as I say, drop me a note. If you have any further thoughts on the subject, you're always welcome. All righty. Let's see. Last but not least, I had a question to Jim and Jim primarily, but it's okay. I can't use that open. Maybe there's some others. Thoughts about spectrum sharing. So what this is about is that it was just announced today that the government is going to allow the arrangement between AT&T and SiriusXM to figure out how to use this 2,000 meg spectrum that borders between terrestrial wireless and SiriusXM's frequency. SiriusXM was worried about the cell sites killing them. And similarly, by the way, not just AT&T, but other users who happen to have that spectrum in other jurisdictions, were worried about the terrestrial repeaters that exist for bridges and things like that that extend SiriusXM coverage into shadowed areas like overpasses, tunnels, bridges, etc., would get in the way of the cell signals. So I was just wondering what people thought about that. If they have any ideas as to, you know, what the filter might look like, and want to discuss that. That might be something interesting. What would you put on your on your Sirius antenna to keep broadband noise from adjacent frequencies out? Any thoughts?
And that's okay.
Mr. Jim.
I really think you need a poly filter, short for political, as it seems that it was, at least from the road here, it seems much more like a political than an engineering-driven decision. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I actually haven't looked. I mean, in all fairness, I do work for AT&T, but I have not looked into this at all. But, okay. Fair enough. That's interesting. You care to elaborate, or was the solution political, or was the problem political?
No, they've taken what should be an engineering question and turned it and answered it with a political answer. I don't know anywhere near enough details to go out into to say that for real. But that's just the impression that it tends to give.
Okay, well, I have not looked at what the decision was from the FCC, but okay, interesting. All right, very good. I'm thinking that you probably need some sort of interesting hunk of ceramic that got all sorts of interesting things sprayed onto it to make inductors and capacitors that will do the job and be basically thermally stable. That's what's coming to my mind, but the exact dimensions thereof and such, I have not really given, much thought to, other than maybe some Chevy Chekhov filter, of some sort. That's where my head's going anyway.
W2CA.
Mr. A.
K2BAR, W2TTT. Yes, but I'm wondering, Gordon, now you're saying this is some interference, because I don't have it now, but I had the XM Sirius and stuff like that, and there are these terrestrial transmitters to fill in the city areas and things like that. What is this interference with it?
What I understood the problem to be, some time ago, was that Sirius had concerns that these cell sites were going to make it impossible for people to hear their signal. And of course, they're in the business of providing that signal with multiple carriers. It's a digital thingy that's multiplexing to gazoo with all sorts of audio streams. Either using the Sirius technology or the XM technology. I'm not sure which one was, at risk, actually. But having said all that, the upshot is that there was that concern expressed. And apparently, after some period of time, they had worked out a solution. I had heard that, some time ago, but now I'm hearing that the FCC has come up with some sort of wisdom of Solomon, or according to Jim, maybe, a polyfilter high-height solution. But I honestly don't know what the answer was, but neither here nor there. It is what it is. I'm just kind of curious as to what might be afoot. But anyway, if anyone knows, great. If they don't, we can just move on.
Okay, I really don't know. I didn't know there was some whatever reasons or causes or results like this. From what I've read of the satellite radio and what publications I read, that I just hadn't caught that. That's why I was asking it. You're saying that what they send terrestrially could be picked up in cell sites that people could hear it, say, on their phones unauthorized?
Oh, no. No, this was more of a pure RFI problem. One signal would get into the other's front end and, you know, descents, provide unacceptable levels of descents, and piece of broadband noise, et cetera, that would then in turn, you know, deny people access to the service for which they're paying. So that was the concern. They don't operate on the same frequencies. They operate on adjacent frequencies. But when I saw something a few months ago in the media, I thought it was actually pretty clean. And I thought that I didn't go into a lot of technical detail, but maybe I missed something. Jim, do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, that's okay.
Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I have no particular knowledge of this, other than to say that, how should I say, they seem to have a bad habit of stacking not particularly compatible things pretty close to each other. Then again, it really, really presses the manufacturers in a direction that I think they probably really should go anyway, and that is to improve their front ends. You know, the days of having simple, let's say, LC or really sloppy front end on any receiver is pretty well long gone. Anyway, no direct or specific knowledge, but more of a general feeling. NS2K.
I think that's probably a wise and appropriate concern. That was kind of what I was getting at. I wanted to stick to the engineering. Is how would you do that? Yeah. But, okay. Well, there you go. I think that's the right answer. Sturdier front ends. And by the way, a good chunk of the front end, not just a preamp, but could be put in the puck, you know, the little antenna thingy that you have. So, I mean, right now it's just a preamp and, you know, some sort of antenna built into that module that's fed over the, you know, with power over the feed line. But there's no reason why you couldn't put more of that front end up there, too. It certainly had better filtering up there. So that's all good. All right, now let's move that on. So last but not least is our subject of DDVTs. And Jim, you were kind enough to send me a bunch of links, which were really cool. These are those little $20 scanning receiver thingies. And you basically use a software-defined front end to run them. And unlike the Flex, which is a transceiver, by the way, you can run this thing with both a Windows platform and various Linux platforms, and I think even possibly an Apple iOS platform. I think they're available there too. So you plug this little USB thing for $20 into your computing device, whatever it may be, and away you go. So we got thinking about it the other day and said, oh, well, why not just plug it into a Raspberry Pi, which is a really tiny processor. And we weren't the first ones to that radio. And Jim found a bunch of sources on it. And the thing they pointed out is that there's probably not enough processing power, even if you upspeed the 700 meg processor to a gig, probably not enough processing power in this little Raspberry Pi. try to actually do the decoding. However, what you can do is that this little Linux implementation has a TCP server built into it. So what you could do is log into it remotely, take the INQ streams down from the Raspberry Pi and DVB-T combination, and then decode it wherever you are using another platform, such as a hunkier PC or an iOS machine, Apple, or even another Linux machine. So it really is kind of sweet. So you can remote access into the thing. And what's even cooler is you probably can remote it to more than one if you wanted to have a diversity receiver set up. You probably have several receivers set up to monitor and just have them all piped in and have them all monitoring from different locations from different Raspberry Pi DVBTs. So for, let's say, the cost of a Raspberry Pi, which is roughly about $35, and a DVBT, which is about $20, and maybe some miscellaneous components like a box of power and some internet connectivity of some sort, figure somewhere between $60 and $100. You build yourself a receiver that will tune from DC to light. It's not the most sensitive receiver in the world. It's not meant to be. It's not like a Wind radio or something like that. But it's enough so that you have a reasonable device to use it to tune up your equipment, take a measurement, both power and frequency, things like that. And you can do it remotely, so that's kind of cool too. So people might want to think about that. And so I think what we'll do is we'll get that working in the next month or so. We're going to get past this weekend. And once that's done, we can actually demonstrate it at an upcoming club meeting or a kit night or whatever else. And Jim, did you want to say anything?
Just to say that it is a remarkable little platform, albeit not terribly powerful. The other question is, had you noticed that they have changed the specification on it to double the RAM? Now, anything they're shipping right today has 512 megs of RAM instead of the previous 256 MS2K.
I had read that sometime earlier, and that was marvelous news. Not super critical for what I want to do, but maybe in the future it will be. But we're gonna see about that. One of the things I want to do is part of the project I'm doing for work is see if I can get us a jump on getting one of these just for fun, as a stretch goal kind of thing. So we'll probably mess with that just for the grin of it. And then, once that's squared away, we'll turn around and develop some hobby applications and perhaps some work applications for it. It's all good. This is to say the least, adds a whole new dimension to the term plug and play.
W2CA.
Go ahead, Ray.
Is this something like I saw in the VU Digest? A DTV-T USB dongle makes a decent SDR radio. It says it's a DVD-B-T dongle, which is no use here in North America. That's about $25 on eBay, and use a program called Zadig.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And, if you put it directly into, anything resembling even the most modest of PCs, it's fine. But what's really sweet about it is that, you have the option of, as they say, remoting this thing with a Raspberry Pi to some other location. And once you do that, then you can pump it into a more comfortable location. So conceivably you could put this receiver somewhere else that has a better RF view. And instead of running coax down, you run cat wire, or you run a cell modem or a Wi-Fi, whatever, to reach where you are.
Okay, I see, it says here, it talks about having a gigahertz or faster device, and should have MS.NET Framework 3.5 already installed, and you'll need to download the driver for the dongle and plug in the dongle. So what is it, you need this MS.NET Framework 3.5?
Yeah, the .NET framework, 3.5, 4.0, whatever, that all works. But that's if you're running a Windows platform. But if you're not running a Windows platform, you can run something else, and it's just fine. I mean, it really is just fine. So there's Linux platforms to be running. What we're doing, or in the process of setting up, actually, Jim and I both, are doing this with Raspberry Pis, which are little tiny controllers that really don't have enough power to do an effective decoding job, but they do have enough to create the INQ streams, and then you can pump it across the internet to wherever you want to go, and that's sufficient, and that's kind of where we're heading out to do, because then you can do other things like bring that receiver to another place and store what it says, and record, playback, edit, all those fun things that you might want to do with it, do additional processing, etc., whether it's Windows or not, whether Windows, Linux, or whatever, on the other end. So you could have, the Adafruit, not the Adafruit, the Raspberry Pi box be plugged into the DVB-T, but on the other end, you could, Ethernet or whatever you want, network it back, and then plug it into something much more powerful, which doesn't have to be Linux-based, and you do it as a remote thing. One other thing to think about is that you want the 4000 series processor, not the 400 series processor, in whatever DVB-T device you get, and the reason for that is because it'll have a broader tuning range.
Okay, is this where they're referring to the tuners here, the Realtek RTL2832 chip and an Elonix E4000 tuner chip? Is that what you mean by the 4000?
Right, you want to make sure you get the 4000 chip.
Okay, well, I see some other things here. It mentions something, a program called SDR with the Sharp has been written that can be downloaded and installed on your desktop or laptop computer. This lets you turn your radio on, change frequency, adjust bandwidth. But what you're saying, I know the Raspberry Pi. I've seen some YouTube stuff on it and some things on the computer, plus what you've discussed. And so that's another aspect of it. But I just wanted to be correct, see that I was correct, that I saw what you were talking about related to this. So they say here that you can turn them into a digital version of an ICOM R7000 7100, but for these prices.
I'm still going to argue that it's not probably as nice as the 7000 from the standpoint of sensitivity, but you know what, it's enough to get you going and get a receive signal where you might want it, and that's the point. Jim, did you want to follow on that topic?
Just to say that, having pre-filtering per band or whatever is going to help a lot. Where this appears to be just a simple, really broadband thing. It'll work great in a quiet RF environment, but if you have something that's more challenging, it may not do quite so well as something that was a little more seriously designed with a more extensive
Alrighty. Anybody else have any questions or comments on the subject? Any of this FDR stuff? Alrighty. Any other questions, comments, confusions for the net tonight? Unless anyone's got anything else, I think we're going to call it a night, a little early night, which is fine. We'll deal with that. Pleasures of setting up, you know, the Raspberry Pi and such. We can probably do that as a very quick tutorial. The online tutorials were pretty amazing. If anyone wants to see Jim's email, you can either ask me or Jim to forward it to them. I'll be more than happy to send that on as well. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for a nice night tonight. Very diverse as always. And hopefully we'll work you on Jamboree on the Air and bring your ideas to and your goodies next to next Thursday night for what you might want to clear out of your shack. And we'll go from there. And it is a swap ad shop. It doesn't have to be for sale. You can stuff you want out. But maybe somebody else would like to make good use of it. You can make an arrangement for a deal for swap and stuff.